This is going to be a little different today. So for those of you that may be new to my sermons, this isn't what I normally give. But I wanted to do this today. If you'll remember, about 6 or 8 months ago, I asked you to give me topics that you would like to see discussed. And I've been going through those, and I thank you for those. I do have still have 3 or 4 more that I haven't done yet. But one of them was, how much do we prepare when bad times are happening? When we look at the trials that are going on in the world, we look at the things that we have, the weather. You obviously can see the picture of the hurricane here. How do you prepare for things? And how do you prepare for what's coming that we know in the future that prophecy tells us? I wanted to start by looking at what is prophesied in Daniel chapter 12. This is something that we know. We have all read this before. And this is something that we know is coming at some point in time in the future. It says, at that time, if you go back into chapter 11, it talks about the king of the north and the king of the south and this battle that's going on in Europe. At that time, Michael will stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, and there will be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. We know and we call that the Great Tribulation, as it's mentioned in several places in Scripture. But at that time, your people will be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. And those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, close up, shut up the words, seal up the book until the time of the end. Many will run to and fro, and knowledge will be increased. Then, verse 5, Daniel, then I, Daniel, looked, and there stood two others, one on this riverbank and the one on the other side. And the one said to the other, how long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? That's a question that we ask ourselves all the time. I've been asking it since I was a teenager. I'm sure that the disciples, as they were writing, you remember even the Apostle Paul talked about those of us who are alive and remain. He certainly thought that he was going to be alive at the return of Jesus Christ. And yet it didn't happen, and it hasn't happened for the last 2,000 years so far. But we still wonder, when will it happen? Is it decades away and not in my future, and so I don't have to do anything? Or is it just a few years away? We don't know. We haven't been given that. But the question that was asked by one of you in this audience here was, what preparations should we make to prepare for hard times ahead? Or should we even prepare? I mean, there's two sides to this story. What I want to do is I want to break this sermon into two parts: how to prepare physically for things that we know will happen, and how to prepare spiritually for things that are going to really be out of our control. So let's talk about the physical first. We've got people sitting in this audience right here that do prepare. They have foodstuffs that they've set aside. Some of our members stockpile goods. You can look at this picture on the left. This is a pantry. I had another picture on here, and then I took it out because it was a picture of a prepper, and the only thing on the shelf was coffee. So I'm not sure what that guy had in mind, but you can see here people that take the time. Some build bunkers. Some do this. They call them preppers, and they're going to be ready for whatever happens. There are others, though, that think that if you prep like that, it's a lack of faith. And I've talked to people who've said that too. No, we need to be like Elijah here when God sent him away and said, I'll feed you. And ravens brought him bread and meat. Now, I don't know if I would want to eat meat that a raven brought to me. But if it was from God, I suppose it would be clean food. That would be kind of tough. Some would look at the fact that God gave manna to the Israelites. He provided for them. They bellyached a lot, but he always provided for them. And so we don't need to prepare. We just need to trust God. And we've got both types of people. And for those people that don't prepare and they rely on God, then Hurricane Ida hits and they don't have anything in their household. Hurricane Ida was my first big hurricane. Now, you guys are champions down here. Some of you survived Katrina and many of the others. But that was an eye-opener for me. I hadn't seen one of those before. That was very interesting. What I'd like to do is draw some scenarios and mull over our reaction to them. These are physical things that we have to prepare for and look for. We'll start simple, and progressively get more serious as we go. How would you prepare for a natural disaster? This is Hurricane Ida that came through here. How would you prepare for something like that? For us, in our area, we have hurricanes, we have power outages, spawned tornadoes can come from some of these. Some of you still probably have some damage to your property from Hurricane Ida. That's a part of it. I remember going down to, I think it was Tammy's mom's funeral, and going along that road. I don't know what the name of the road is, but that was torn to bits. I was amazed at how much damage was done down there from this storm. I know Mr. Petrie, that storm went right through Houma and caused a lot of damage in his area too. We usually know days or weeks ahead, and we can start to prepare for that. I'm just curious. I'm going to ask this question when I get up in Laurel, and I think it's going to be the exact opposite. How many of you have a generator at home? Yeah. See, that was one of my first purchases when I came down here. Some of you have got two or three probably. But that's something that we can do to prepare. I have a generator. At the time that I bought mine, they didn't have tri-fuel generators. They have those now. But I bought a kit, converted it to natural gas, and hooked it up to our natural gas line so I don't have to go to the store like my neighbors did with gas cans every 10 hours or so and try and get some more stuff. Keeping foodstuffs on the shelves, that's always a good idea. You know, there are a lot of things that can last for a really long time if they're in a cool place. Canned foods, MREs, things like that, pastas. I looked it up to see how long they can last, It's interesting. Some of them say after a couple of years you need to be suspect, and others said no, some of those MREs can last for 25, 30 years. But anyway, having things on there is a good idea. Mr. Horchak even did an article one time on prepping, and he talked in the article about for those things that we can prepare for, we should prepare for. So it's a good idea to have those things on the shelf. I put this up here. I actually wasn't going to do any PowerPoint, but I actually wanted to show you this. There is a government website that is really good. It's called ready.gov/kit. And in it, it tells you how to prepare an emergency survival kit to have in a pantry or something like that for emergencies that come along. And it's interesting, the things that they had there, flashlights and medical supplies, et cetera. But they even have things like games to keep your kids active. I know when Hurricane Ida came through, and we were without power for 6 or 7 days. I don't remember exactly how long. You just sat there. I mean, you can't watch TV. You can't do this. You can't do that. So it was interesting to see what they have here. And this is a good site. They even talked about having a wind-up radio. Does anybody have a wind-up radio? Do you know what I'm talking about? There are a few. So if you've lost the power, you can get radios that you crank up and they'll store a charge and then it'll turn on and then you can listen to local news. They even have them where you can charge a cell phone or whatever through those wind-up things. We should always be prepared physically for these types of disasters. So it's a good idea to have things sitting. But how about some other things that are going to be happening as the world gets darker and darker? What happens with the impending decline of moral values? Now, you might think, well, how do I prepare for that? This has come up a lot, and we've talked about this even in ministerial conferences. We have members that are living in areas that are, to say they're under attack is probably overstating it, but there are some things that are going on now, especially on the West Coast, where the morality has declined so much that some of our members are actually experiencing some persecution based on the way of life that they would choose to live. There are a lot of people that are taking their kids out of school and homeschooling, especially in Oregon. I'll show you a chart here in just a minute that talks about that. But they've got in some areas where the parents are not allowed, the schools are not allowed to let the parents know if the kid wants to transition or anything that's going on. They have to, the schools now are being forced by law to hide that from the parents. And some of the parents are having to go through that. So what do? Do you move to a more conservative place? Interestingly enough, do you know where the number one place that people are moving to? New Hampshire. That's where people are going. I looked at it. I was really amazed. There's a, I don't know if I have a chart on here or not, but a lot of people are going to New Hampshire. There's an article out there entitled 30 Reasons to Move to New Hampshire. And I looked through, and after the reading that article, I thought, I want to move to New Hampshire. But then I thought, no, I could probably write 30 reasons of not going to New Hampshire. One of them would be how cold it gets in the winter. I grew up in cold, but I don't know if I could do that anymore. With the declining morals that are going on, it may be that it's harder for us to stay employed. There are some areas now, I mentioned this in a sermon not too long ago, where people are now being required to use preferred pronouns. If you misgender someone, you can get fired. Things like that are going to start happening. How do you prepare for something like that? Some of the articles that I've read talk about, well, here's one of them. This actually is, if you want to read something frightening, this is a country law now in Canada, and it's called Section 23. So if you ever want to do some research, look at Canada Section 23. This is a new law that's been written to talk about what you can and can't do as a parent to your children. And it talks about spanking, it talks about disciplining, it talks about raising your voice, the things that you can and can't do, and they're very, very specific. So it's not a general thing anymore. They'd like set guidelines, and guidelines are good. I mean, obviously, if someone's abusing their child, then that needs to be stopped. But this goes to the place where teachers are not allowed to do anything anymore. Parents, in some cases, are not allowed to discipline their children, and it's just kind of running amok. I want to say it's Sweden, and I might be wrong. It might be Denmark. They have outlawed spanking. You cannot spank your child if you live in that country. And they don't call it spanking. They call it beating. I think that the term they use is you can't beat your child, meaning to even spank them. So that's happening now, and that's something that is getting harder and harder for us. This is from Oregon. They now have things that are going on in schools where they're starting to put books in libraries that are criminal. And the problems that is causing even for some of our church kids. I talked with our pastors that live out in the West Coast, and there are some church families that their kids are struggling with wanting to know, do I identify as a boy or a girl? It's starting to affect the church out on the West Coast. How do you prepare for moral decline? The parents versus the schools. I've seen a lot of articles out there about the schools now feel that they are better at raising your children than the parents are. And so they're trying to take the right of the parents away so that they can teach them how to run their lives from school and not from home. These are things that we're going to have to face in the future. How can you prepare physically for something like that? You can't. But you can work on yourself spiritually, and we'll get to that in just a little while. I want to talk about a couple of more things that are going to happen more and more. If we have the next pandemic, what do you do? Well, first thing you do is you go out and you buy a bunch of toilet paper, like we did the last time we had. That, to me, was an interesting overreaction to a problem that, I mean, we've had pandemics before. My grandfather died in the flu virus in 1918 in Chicago. And but it's like nobody was ready for that when it happened. How do you prepare for things like that? There are a lot of sites that are talking about this, and if you can see on the left, the World Health Organization now has named the next one, they're calling it right now Disease X, and they're trying to prepare for it. Disease X is something that is they know is coming, and they're trying to do what they can to get ready for this next pandemic. Is a pandemic hard to prepare for? Well, yes, in some cases it is, but in some cases we need to be doing smart things ourselves. One of the reasons I think why pandemics spread so much easily now is people travel a lot. And you get something in an airport, and you get people that come from a different city, and then they go to an airport, they catch it, and then they go back to their homes, and it can spread very fast. Look at Leviticus chapter 26. It says, I also will do this to you. I will appoint terror over you, a wasting disease and a fever which shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart. That's in Leviticus 26 is one of the sections that talks about the blessings that come from obedience, but the curses that happen when a nation becomes disobedient. I don't know if you do this or not, but I do this often. Not only do I pray for President Biden or whoever the president is, I actually pray that God will help the United States to come to repentance. Like Jonah, when he went to Nineveh, Nineveh repented, and I would like to see the United States come to repentance. Whether it will or not, we'll have to see. Matthew 24, this is in the Olivet Prophecy. Jesus Christ himself said, "There will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places, but these are just the beginning of sorrows." Now, when I look up the word pestilence, that sometimes when you think of pestilence, what came to my mind was like locusts and all of that. But this word pestilence actually means diseases. And it can be caused by locusts or by other pests. But this specific word is Jesus Christ is saying there would be famines, but there will also be diseases that will happen. What about the collapse of the monetary system? How many of you have ever read the book, The Grapes of Wrath? There's some pretty indelicate parts to that, so you've got to look past it. Authors have to write things that that draw attention. But it's an interesting book talking about what happened to the United States and what we believe could happen in the very near future. During the Great Depression, my mother went through that. My mom was born in 1918, so she was a teenager in her early 20s when that came through. And she talked about what it was like during that time, and it was, as she would tell the stories, to me that was terrifying because I couldn't imagine surviving in a world like that. Growing up in a world like that, she knew what time to open the windows to get the flow through for when the summer, she knew which windows to open. I just turn on the air conditioner. I don't know how to do that, but she did. She reused aluminum foil. She would never throw aluminum foil away. You use it, and then you'd put it out on the counter, and you'd straighten it out, and you'd fold it up, and you'd put it in a drawer, because they didn't have stores to be able to go to like that during this period of time. A lot of people were out of work. A lot of people were really struggling during that period of time. Look at the pictures here. In the bottom right is the Dust Bowl that came through the United States and sent people fleeing to California. And now I think the grandsons and great-grandsons are fleeing California and trying to go someplace else. But that was a pretty tough time. We'll read some scriptures about that in just a moment. Upper right-hand corner, that's in Somalia today, where the income that's the people have, they have an income coming in, but the value of the dollar bill that they have is almost completely worthless. And they have people that do this. They set up and they will trade you a wheelbarrow full of Somali dollars for like a U.S. $5 bill. It's almost completely worthless there. People running around with all kinds of money, but it doesn't do anything for them. Let's read a couple of scriptures that talk about this time. Ezekiel chapter 7, verse 19. This is a prophecy about the future. It says, "They will throw their silver into the streets, and their golds will be like refuse. Their silver and their gold will not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. They will not satisfy their souls nor fill their stomachs, because it became their stumbling block of iniquity." Can you imagine a time coming when people will have gold and they will have silver, but it won't have any value to it anymore? And people will have to learn how to live during that time. Deuteronomy, and I think I misspelled Deuteronomy, but I did. Deuteronomy chapter 28 says, "Your heavens which are over your head will be like bronze, and your earth under you will be like iron. The Lord will change the rain of your land to powder and dust, and from the heaven it shall come down on you until you are destroyed." We don't have that yet. Obviously, we had a lot of rain this last week, but we know that there are famines, there are disease epidemics that are prophesied to happen. How do you prepare for things like that? Do your own personal study. Look up the Dust Bowl of the 1930s. I think you'll find that a very interesting read of what people had to go through and what they did during that period of time to survive. Now, we are in areas where we really can't prepare for something like that, but there are some things that we can do in the short term, but when things get this bad, then we will end up just having to cry out for help from our Heavenly Father. One more thing, and then we'll get to a little more positive stuff. Actually, two more things. How about the collapse of democracy? That is something that is being talked about right now. There are extremely liberal politicians that would like for us to get rid of the republic that we have and go toward socialism. And it's been talked about for a long time, and it's getting close. Let's read at the very top in Leviticus 26, another part of the prophecy of the curses that will come. It says, "After this, if you will not obey me, I will punish you seven times more for your sins, and I will break the pride of your power." You know, the United States has a lot of pride, and we have a lot of power. We are a world-dominant power right now. But what will happen to us if we continue down the path that we're going? This is a very liberal, The Hill is a very liberal website, newsletter, but just talked about the fact that if Donald Trump wins 2024, our system of government is going to collapse. Now, nobody believes that, I think, sitting in this room, but it's interesting what they say. They did a public opinion poll, and I wanted to read this because there's something behind this that I think we need to be aware of. It says, "Public opinion research shows faith in democracy and government is all over the map. 60% of Americans reporting that they have little confidence in the future of the political system." That I agree with. I have no confidence in Republicans, Democrats, Independents. Right now, there is so much infighting that there's nothing that's getting done, right? We know that. A full 77% think the country is moving in the wrong direction. I think most of us in the church would think that the United States is moving in the wrong direction. 52% agree that America's best days are behind us. I think about the book that Tom Brokaw wrote called The Greatest Generation. From those people that grew up in the 40s and 50s, that was a very, very different world. I've said this before. My father was not in the church, couldn't stand the church. But if he were resurrected right now and could see the state of the world, he would be appalled at what he saw, because it just was different in his day. 90% think democracy isn't working well. Only 16% say that they trust the government to do what is right. In other words, this article says conditions are ripe for the death of democracy in America. Is that a real threat that's going to happen? Many people think that it will. I wanted to talk a little bit about this last point now, because this is something that is also going to come. We are going to see, as prophecy shows, the rise of the beast and the false prophet. There's going to be a tribulation that's going to occur. There's going to be a day of the Lord. And there's no amount of preparation that we can do for that. There's an article on Life Open Truth called How to Prepare for End Times. And I want to read a quick quote here. It says, "Even if you have stockpiled enough survival rations to fill an Olympic-sized swimming pool, built a bunker that could withstand a nuclear holocaust, and hoarded enough guns and ammo to fend off a standing army of a small country, it wouldn't be enough. What is coming is something that we will not be able to handle physically. So we prepare for the things that we can, and that preparing for natural disasters and things like that are a good thing. There's going to come a time where physical preparation is just not going to be enough. And we're going to have ourselves spiritually ready to be able to handle those times. Think about what they had to go through when the Dust Bowl hit or when the Great Depression hit. They had to learn things that they didn't know before. What was right before the 1930s? It was the Roaring Twenties. If you go back and look at what that was like, people were going out in speakeasies and nightclubs, and they were dancing, and a lot of debauchery was going on. And God pulled his blessings away, and we went through a very terrible time. How do you then prepare spiritually? And that's what I want to really spend the rest of the sermon on, is how to prepare spiritually. For those that didn't go through this, I know I talk about this a lot, and you think, oh, here he goes again. I know that a lot of people in 1986, when Mr. Armstrong died, I want to talk about that date for a moment. Marlis and I worked in Pasadena, and we were there. I worked on the first floor in telecommunications. Mr. Armstrong's office was on the fourth floor, right straight up, and his elevator came through our office, so we saw him a lot. I remember going to work that day, and the flag was at half-mast, and I didn't know why. And I went in to discover that he had died. I was not expecting him to die. In my mind, in 1986, Christ was going to return. He was going to be one of the two witnesses. I mean, I had this whole scenario drawn out. I was absolutely convinced. And for a period of time, I shook. I didn't know what to do. I thought, well, this can't be. And I wasn't prepared for that. I wasn't prepared spiritually. I know a lot of people did the same thing. 1995 happened. This is an article that came out in Christianity Today. Mainstream moves may split the worldwide Church of God. Yeah, it did. That's exactly what happened. There was another article in the Pasadena Star News that was derisive of the church. And it said, the title of it was, How to Destroy a Church. And then it went on and talked about all the doctrinal changes that was going on at the time. I had a lot of friends, and you probably did too, that went through that period of time, and some handled it well and some didn't. I've got personal friends, and you probably do too. When some of the offshoots started to come up, they said, you know, Christ is going to return, it's imminent, and I'm just going to stay in my house and I'm going to close the door. And a lot of them kind of drifted away as a result of that because they weren't prepared for what was happening. That was 29 years ago when Mr. Armstrong died. Can you believe that? That's been a long time. Where are those people now? A lot of people just stopped believing. They separated themselves from the body of believers, and over half of them gave up the truth. They didn't prepare themselves spiritually. I want to look at some scriptures here. This is how to talk about spiritual survival. We're going to start in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. It says, Moreover, brethren, I don't want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud. They all passed through the sea, and they were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and they all ate the same spiritual food. They all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. Now, I want to set the scenario up here. These are people that have come out of Egypt. They've come out together. They're all in it together. They all go through. They all ate the same food. They drank the same drink. Jesus Christ was there teaching them, giving them the Ten Commandments. They all had the same thing. But notice what it said in verse 5. But with most of them, God wasn't pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Go back to 1995, when all of us, 140-something thousand of us, hit this crisis. What happened? Was God pleased with what everyone did? I think that if you look at the fact that there are going to be problems coming in the future, that we need to get ourselves to a place, even with all the miracles that God did for Israel, most of them didn't see the need to get with the program that God was doing. They faced trials. God supported them time and again. What value is it in us studying these things? Now, I know we go through this a lot during the days of unleavened bread, but for the sake of this, I want you to think about what's being said here. This is what Paul said about that. Verse 6, Now these things became our examples to the intent that we shouldn't lust after evil things as they lusted. We can look at things that happened in the past. When I bring up 1995, and those of you, how many of you were born after 1995? All right, we've got people that are afraid to raise their hands here. Come on, get your hands up. Let me see them. All right. So you weren't there. You didn't see that. And so here's all us old folks going, you need to be ready because things like this can happen. This is what Paul is saying. Go back and look at what happened to ancient Israel. Why were they, with all of the things that they saw, the pillar of fire and the drowning of the Egyptians in the sea, the giving of the Ten Commandments, they actually heard the voice of God, and yet they weren't there. Now, these things became our examples to the intent that we shouldn't lust after things as they lusted. Look at the world right now and the way the world is going. Look at what's happening in the world. Look at what is happening to the morals of the world, and don't let yourself look at it, but don't let yourself get involved in it. Verse 7, do not become idolaters, as some were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, and they rose up to play. That's today. People eat and drink and rise up to play. We're in this playful mood right now where the economy's good. We may not like our president, or we may not like, you know, this or that, but life is good. Verse 8, nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did and as people are doing today, that in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents, nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. On their road to the promised land, they encountered temptation. They encountered trials. They fought against Moses every opportunity that they could. So why is this important? Look at verse 11. Now, all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition. And notice what he said, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. One of the ways to prepare ourselves for what's coming is to look in the rearview mirror. You remember the old saying, people that don't study history or look in the past are doomed to repeat it. And that's the function of what a lot of these stories in the Old Testament especially, and even what happened to the disciples in the New Testament. Read about what happened to some of these people, and it will give us a better idea of how we should stand firm against the things that happen in this world. And this isn't just what happened to ancient Israel. This has been going on throughout church history. I want to spend just a little bit of time here and talk about what your brothers and sisters that lived in the 1200s had to put up with because of the Inquisition. The Catholic Church was at its kind of peak, and there were decisions made that anybody that didn't follow Catholic doctrine should be excommunicated at the very best and killed at the very worst. I'd like to read a little bit about one of these people, Sabbath keepers, and what they went through. So this is a kind of a long thing here, but I think you'll find this an interesting read. This is from, I'll just tell you who it's from, it's Bonacurus. He wrote a treaty called Against Heretics, who were called the Passagini. So the Passagini were a group of people, they were Sabbath keepers. Here's what he writes. Many know what are the errors of those that are called the Passagini, and how nefarious their beliefs and doctrines are. Because there are some who do not know them, it does not annoy me to write what I think of them, in order that their foolishness might become more widely known, and that they might be the more condemned and despised of all. He started out as someone that was in a group like this, and then got converted back to Catholicism, and now he's persecuting the very people that he used to be. So he's talking about these. He says, let those who are not yet acquainted with him, please note how perverse their beliefs and doctrines are. So what were these perverse doctrines that were taught? First, they teach that we should obey the law of Moses according to the letter, the Sabbath and the legal precepts still being in force. They also teach that the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, that these three people are not one God or one being. Furthermore, to increase their error, they condemn and reject all of the church fathers and the whole Roman church. That sound familiar? But because they seek to base their errors upon the witness of the New Testament, imagine that. Think about what he's saying. He's saying, look, these people are so corrupt, they're trying to base their religion off the Bible. I want to read that again. Because they seek to base their errors upon the witness of the New Testament and the prophets, let us slay them with their own sword by the aid of the grace of Christ, as David once slew Goliath. He was calling people to arms, and they did. They went through and they found the people, and many of our forefathers were burned at the stake, were killed over keeping the Sabbath. How do you prepare for something like that? How do you get your mind around events like that that may happen? Reading about these people, many of them recanted their beliefs and went back to Catholicism to avoid persecution, but many of them stayed faithful. take the time, again, to read through what some of your forefathers went through in the 1200s. It is a horrifying but interesting read. And going through that, it can help you understand how you need to be solid in your beliefs. I'm thankful that we live in this country where we don't face that type of persecution, at least not yet, and hopefully we won't. But some of our brethren in overseas are facing these things right now. We've had some of our church members that were put in jail because they had a Bible study in their home, and they spent time in jail. Some of them have to go through some pretty serious trials. I have a feeling when, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I'll do it anyway. I have a feeling that when the tribulation really happens, some of the people in Africa are going to go, "What, is this it?" Because of what they're going through now, I think we're going to look at it and we're going to be terrified by what's going on. And they're, it's like we've been living like this for most of our lives. So how do we prepare? Let's get into a few points here. How do we prepare ourselves for the hard times that are ahead? Let's think about that toolkit or that survival kit that was put together by the U.S. government on things that you should have, your flashlights and your radios and your medicines and some foodstuffs and water. What do we do to prepare for the hard times that are ahead? What should be in our spiritual survival kit? The first one, as I just had talked about, is learn from the past. When we study the things that are in the Bible, like what happened to ancient Israel, like what happened to Stephen in the New Testament, when you look at those things, they help you understand the importance of staying close to God. Learn the lessons from the past. Read about the good examples and read about the bad examples. The good examples will give you encouragement. The bad examples will give you pause. And that is a very good thing to study. Ask a question here. This would be a good sermonette. I'll just pop that out there if any of you want to do this. Why were Joshua and Caleb allowed to enter the promised land, but Moses and Aaron weren't? Moses and Aaron were the leaders, and they didn't get to go in. What happened? Why didn't they get to go in? Do you know that story? Do you know why Moses wasn't allowed to go into the promised land? Do you know why Aaron wasn't? Some of us that have gone over to Petra, there's a hill where Aaron supposedly was buried. They've got a little shrine up there. Did you go to that? Did you get to see that? Some of them that actually got to go up there, well, it would have been your brother, not you, but I think he did. I think he went up there. I was too old and too weak to be able to make that trip because it is a hike uphill. If you ever get the chance to go to Petra, I highly recommend it. It's an amazing place. But read about what happened. Knowing how others survived can give us faith and hope that God will be there for us too. Here's the second point. Prepare, but don't predict. And I could put my name there. I told you this story before. When I was in my 20s, I knew the day that Jesus Christ was going to return. I knew it. I went to my teachers at Ambassador College, and I couldn't understand why they didn't follow what I was saying. Because I spent this time in trying to predict the future. You need to prepare for the end time, but that does not mean predicting the end time. If you do that, that type of preparation tends to distract us from real spiritual growth. And we can get into that. I know of one minister whom I truly adored. I just thought he was a great man. He was one of my teachers at Ambassador College. But he was fixated on studying prophecy and charts and all of that, to the place where he got so distracted by that he eventually fell away and just lost all interest in it because what he was predicting didn't happen. There's a group out there right now. I won't name names, but it's a splinter group of the Worldwide Church of God. Their leader has predicted, I think, 38 times in the last 3 years the day that Christ was going to return. And he's been wrong every time, and he's still doing it. Right now, he says that Christ will return this Passover. And he's set another date that's going to come and go. And people are getting, are kind of falling away from his group because they're not focused on the right thing. They're not focused on growing spiritually. They're focused on trying to predict. It may feel like spiritual growth. I mean, you're studying, and I've got a chart. I should show you the chart. I still got it. And it's massive. It's a big piece of paper, and it's got all the numbers and charts and things on it. And I was very proud of that. But I wasn't becoming a better person. I wasn't yelling less at my kids. I wasn't developing love and patience. I was just all into prophecy. Do a study on William Miller and the Great Disappointment of 1844. For those of you, I've given a sermon on that in the past, where he did the same thing. He was so convinced that he knew when Christ was going to return that on the day that was supposed to happen, they all dressed up in white clothes, women in white dresses, men in white suits. They went up to the top of a mountain, and they were waiting to be whisked up into the clouds. And they were sitting there, and I think some of them were probably jumping, going, come on, take me. And it didn't happen. And guess what? Half to three-quarters of them fell away from any religious involvement at all because of that. Preparing for the end does not mean predicting when the end will come. Matthew chapter 24, verse 36. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. So why do we think we can when God says we can't? And that was what he said to his disciples, and that's there for us today. Verse 44, therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man will come at an hour when you don't expect. Now, this minister that I thought so highly of, we read that to him, and he says, yeah, but that says you can't know the hour, but I know the day. Now, that's not what that means. That's not what that means. We have to be prepared to be ready to go at the drop of a hat. We also have to be prepared if we see our grave at the end of our life and it's for grandkids or great-grandkids or who knows how long. We have to make ourselves ready. We always need to be in a state of readiness. What does that look like? Does that look like having a suitcase packed and waiting to get a call from your pastor saying it's time to flee? No, that's not how that works. Is it setting dates? I actually know of another man. You probably all would know who I'm talking about if I would say his name. He was so convinced that the return of Jesus Christ was going to happen on a certain day and that he was going to be one of the two witnesses that he flew to Jerusalem, got a hotel near the Mount of Olives, and sat there on that day just waiting to be to start the work of the two witnesses. And he wrote a letter back. I read the letter. He said, I don't know what happened, but it was a day like any other. And he just got so depressed. He just knew this was going to happen. That's not how we need to be prepared. Mark chapter 13 gives us our third point. Watch and pray. That's something that you hear all the time, but it is so important. When we look at what's going on in the world today, look at Mark 13. It says, take heed, watch and pray, for you do not know when the time is. So if you don't know when the return of Christ is, what do? Watch and pray. We'll talk about that. It is like a man going to a far country who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to each his work and commanded the doorkeeper to watch. Watch, therefore, for you don't know when the master of the house is coming. Will he come in the evening, at midnight, at the crowing of the rooster, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping? And that I say to all, watch. So how is it that we should be watching? We know what to look for. We know the thing. If you read through the first chapter of the book of Romans, it talks about the debauchery that's going to be in the United States and in the world at the time of Christ's return. If you read those things in Romans chapter 1, we actually have moved past those things. It is worse than what's written in Romans chapter 1. Romans 1 talks about homosexuality and other things, but we've gone past that with this gender fluidity. We need to be watching and looking at the things, not just because, oh boy, I see that. That means Christ is coming. No, I see that, and I need to make sure that I'm not involved in that. I need to have myself spiritually ready so that when the return of Christ comes, I have a spiritual survival kit. I have faith because I've studied. I have faith because I've looked. I have faith because I am praying and asking God to give me the strength and the faith required. That's going to be something that's going to take a lot of people by surprise when it happens, but we've got to be ready for that. Christ told them that they could know the season. Remember the olive tree. When you see the olive tree start to sprout leaves, you know that summer is near. We can see from what's going on in the world, and we can look at that and be prepared. A lot of prophecies that predict the moral state of the world. We know that there's a war coming in the Middle East. You can see that in Daniel chapter 11. A lot of prophecies predict that. Watch for those things. Pray for our leaders, but also pray that we don't get caught up in that moral decline. The further we get away from God's truth, the harder it is for us. We're going to look like the odd people, right? And I think you see that in a lot of ways now in the United States. Let's look at Revelation chapter 12. Revelation chapter 12. We know that God is up there. We know that he wants to protect his people. We know that as the tribulation starts, as the day of the Lord starts, that there will be protection for some of God's people. And let's read about that time. Revelation chapter 12, starting in verse 13. Now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, this is Satan, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. Talking about ancient Israel, but after the time of Christ, it went over to the New Testament church. But it says, but the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she was nourished for time and times and a half a time, 3.5 years, from the presence of the serpent. Look at how bad this will be. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman. The earth opened up its mouth and swallowed up the flood, which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. When I read through that, I think back to what Israel was going through when they came out of Egypt. They were being led out by God, but Pharaoh was pursuing him, just like Satan will try and pursue those people that are a part of God's church. John tells us that many will go to a place in a wilderness to be protected for 3.5 years. And that certainly is a goal that we should all want to. And pray, as it says in Matthew 24, that we be accounted worthy. But that's going to require good character development while we're still in this body. And it will require faith to get through hard times. Watch and pray and make sure that you have your faith. But it will also be necessary that we trust that God will do with us what he wants with us. Not only does it say here that the woman will be protected, but notice what else it says in verse 17. It says, the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Some will have to go through the persecution. Some will be protected during that. We have to leave it to God to know who and what it is that he wants for us. Revelation 6:9, I won't turn there, tells us that there will be some who will be martyred for the testimony of Jesus Christ. So, brethren, I know that hard times are coming, and you look at a sermon like this and you think, wow, this is really depressing, Sandlins, thanks for that. But the question was asked, how do we prepare ourselves? As times are going to get harder, we're going to have to get ourselves stronger. I want to end on a positive note here, so let's conclude in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. This is a section that I read every funeral that I give, but this is a positive thing. 1 Corinthians 15, starting in verse 50. Now this I say, brethren, flesh and blood can't inherit the kingdom of God, nor does corruption inherit incorruption. What we look forward at, and you've heard this before where someone has said, I read the end of the book, we win. Right, so we know what the end result is. The end result is not going to be this physical life. It's going to be eternity with God. Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible. And we will be changed. For this corruptible, this fleshly body must put on incorruption to a spirit body. This mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible has put on incorruption, and this mortal has put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your sting? O Hades, or hell, where is your victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God who gave us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. And then he ends with, I think, a very positive statement. He says, therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, be immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, and knowing that your labor is not in vain. When the times get tough, the tough get going. When the times get tough for us, we need to make sure that our spiritual preparation is being done. What is in your spiritual kit?